Yesterday was a good day. Kind of get caught up, get reorganized, sort of evaluate some things on the first 4 days, scheduling and practice wise, and figure out things we need to do here going forward. Trying to maximize our time and our opportunity, get installed, what we need to do, evaluate, players, our scheme, get ready to play a game here in a little over a week. So it's kind of a good day to get caught up. And, first 4 days, we've taken some kind of movement in the right direction. Ultimately, we'll see how much, but I think we're trying. I mean, players are trying to, do what we ask them to do. We got a long way to go. A number of moving parts and a number of, things we'll have to sort out and figure out, and it'll all have to come together, but we're just taking one step at a time. And so get back out there today, and hopefully with yesterday's day off, we'll be able to, move up a level make a little bit more progress. So we're hopeful for it.
Bill, along those lines, when you have 1 week of joint practices as opposed to two, there's a lot of quality competitive reps in those joint practices. Do you have to account for that as you lay out the next couple of weeks? In the past, you have gone head-to-head against the Eagles, for example, that first week of joint practices 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think you're probably really talking about 2 to 3 days is, what it really amounts to. And the trade-off would be, the competition of those practices, measuring your scheme, measuring, looking at players in different matchups and that type of thing versus, your development and your installation as a team. Whenever we've done that against another opponent or even this year doing it against New Orleans, I'd say the idea isn't to go in there and try to put in a bunch of new things. It would be to run what we have into that point against that team. And so what you gain from that, I think you kind of is offset a little bit by the fact that you're really not putting in something, you're not advancing your scheme. You're kind of holding your scheme steady and trying to take the time to evaluate players. And there's certainly a lot of benefit to both. When you're practicing with yourself, then you kind of structure practice where you can install something new, you work on an individual. You're working on it in group drills, 9-on-7, 7-on-7, half line, whatever it is, and then you work on it in team, and okay, then you come off the field and you've put in something new, you've had a progression, and hopefully, you have a better understanding, you can do it. It's not really something I think that you want to do maybe a little bit of, but I'd say not very much of against another team. You want to run what you know, what you're confident in, and see how it looks. So, like I said, what we're not getting on the competitive evaluation side, I think we have more time in terms of our installation than we had last year. So there's a little bit of a trade-off there. I don't know if it's good or bad, but whatever the time is, we try to use it and get the most out of it. So that's what we're doing.
You have any roster transactions to announce, any new faces?
We'll have some, yeah. I think we got to clean up a couple things, some physicals and all that, but I think we'll have some probably by the end of the day. Make sure you're the first to know, Mike.
I did want to ask you, with Willie McGinnis going into the Patriots Hall of Fame tomorrow, just what stands out to you about his career with the team?
Outstanding. I mean, I go back all the way to, to USC with Willie. I still remember, in that, that spring, meeting with him out there in their big team meeting room and watching film with him, and he had kind of a little bit of an interesting career there at Southern Cal with Coach Robinson, where they his senior year it seemed like they kind of played him in a different spot every week. One time he was a defensive end, then he was a outside linebacker. He played some middle linebacker. Sometimes they'd move him inside, and he kind of. They moved him around in a lot of different positions, trying to free him up, and you could see his versatility and his athleticism and toughness and playmaking, but it was kind of hard to evaluate him because he was kind of doing something different every week. It was really, he didn't really get into a like a real good groove there. And then, of course, Bill drafted him here, coached him in 96. So that would have been like his, third year, right. Okay, right. So he was kind of an outside linebacker. And then in 96, we used him really as a defensive end, a four-man scheme. So although he still played both, but yeah, but again, I think that speaks to his versatility, outside linebacker to defensive end, to then he ended up playing outside linebacker for us in, 2000, 2001, in those years. So, versatile player. I thought he had a great, really competitive guy, tough, team oriented. Winning was really important to him, winning more than personal stats. That was, he took losing hard. I mean, which I think that's a good thing. More than personal accomplishments, great example for younger players. He had a kind of that nice balance of being able to talk to a guy, but also you just watch him do it. And that was a good example too. It wasn't really all one or the other. He had a good rapport with his teammates, but, nobody would mess with Willie. Nobody. He was the most, I'd say, in a time that I've been here, there's maybe one player I would put him up there as the guy that nobody, you just don't want to cross him. If it got to that point, then it's better to back off than get into it with him. So he's very well respected, as he should be. He's a great athlete, great player, great teammate, versatile guy. Championship teams. I mean, he had a great career.
Who was the other player? You say there was one other player that you put up there with him in that?
No, I'd say of all the guys I've been here, he would be the one guy that, and there's really nobody else that comes to mind that kind of in that same vein that you just he too was well respected. Nobody would mess with him.
A little bit about his career
is
the big plays he made, some of the biggest games.
One
was a really cool game against Tennessee. He had a big play against.
Yeah, killed the Colts. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Willie was. But Taylor was a little bit like that at New York. I kind of learned from coaching Lawrence that Lawrence was really smart, and he played hard, he was really tough, but he had a little bit of extra gas in his tank for the critical plays in the game. And so, we can all sit there and watch a game and, here it is, we're ahead, there's not much time left, it's third down, this is going to be one of the plays of the game. Well, that's when you would get his best play. And Lawrence always had a little bit, left for, and he would be able to know, we need this play to win the game. Or, here's three or four plays in the game, and you were gonna get his best on those plays for sure. And there might be a couple other ones that could have been better, but and Willie was kind of like that too. I remember talking to Willie about that, having that same conversation. And I think as a coach, as a player, as a fan, we sit there and watch the game. You can feel, this is a big play coming up here, and. Those kind of guys, McGinnis and Taylor, they had that ability to, reach down at that point in time and give their best, in a lot of cases, make the difference. And, he had a lot of those plays, and not just rushing a passer either, against a run, blowing up a short yardage play where somebody else ends up making it. I mean, that kind of thing. He was, So I think there's a little bit of that. Gamesmanship, maybe the right word, I'm not sure, but just knowing this is, this is it, and I'm going to reach down, I got a little bit extra, and here it is.
Do you ever bring out the game film of Willie or Lawrence, for that matter, and show guys on the team today, to this point, this is how it gets?
Yeah, we talk about different things from time to time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all this, Teddy, Troy, yeah. We go back and see some of that sometimes. Rodney, yeah.
I mean, when you point those things out, Bill, are you looking at, do you show them the technique, or do you?
Could be anything. It's probably 100 things you could show them that are good. It's, depends on the player, the situation, what you're trying to, what point you're trying to make. But, yeah, I mean, those guys are great for a reason, and if you can pass that on to the next generation somehow, yeah, we'll do it. You know, we'll find any way to teach that's beneficial. We'll try to use it, you bet.
You are a proponent for many years of moving the extra point back. Now that that rule change has gone into effect, will you play the point or points after differently this year, and would you practice at all differently in training camp to account for the rule change?
Yeah, of course, we'll practice it the way it is, yeah. I mean, you could still end up kicking a shorter field goal, you know, particularly from a hash mark and, you know, changing the angle for the kicker and all that, but, yeah, absolutely. We'll practice the extra points from where they're going to spot them this year, and probably spend, you know, a little bit more time in terms of our preparation. Not, I don't think it'll be dramatic, but just a little bit more time on the two-point play in case teams, you know, decide to use that strategy.
Yeah. Does it affect, like, will you play the point or points after differently, like, in the season?
You know, we've talked a little bit about that. Again, I think it's kind of a marginal thing. I don't think it's, you know, the pendulum swung one way or the other, but I think marginally it's, you know, a little bit more towards a two-point attempt than a extra point. But still, I mean, even extra point numbers from, you know, the 15-yard line are still there in the high 90s, but it's not 99.6 or whatever it's been. So, but, you know, we're talking marginally, but it's still a difference. So yeah, I don't think it'll be a, you know, have a dramatic shift in the strategy, but I think it, you know, we'll have some in certain situations. We'll have to, you know, be conscious of that. Again, to me, the extra point was automatic. I mean, when you're talking over 99%, I mean, it's an automatic play. Now it's less than that. It's still high, but it's less than that.
Bill, in general, what are the dynamics of having two big tight ends together in the red zone, being able to have them as targets?
Well, I think the main thing in the red zone is whoever you're throwing to, somehow that person has to create some separation with the defense, and it's hard because there's not very much space, and the defense is taught to get on those guys quickly. So whether it's quickness, size, it's a ability to catch the ball away from your body with great hands consistently, maybe a particularly a person that excels in a particular route, the technique of it, like a fade or a slant or some type of, you know, push-off contact play to create separation. But it's hard to get open down there, and there's not a lot of space. And, you know, if the defense drops 7 against 5 or 8 against 5, which is teams are doing a little bit more of that, going with three-man rush down there to get that extra guy in coverage, it's just really tight. So any player that can separate, whether it's size, quickness, hands, technique, makes him a good red area receiver. And so I don't think it has to be a tight end or not a tight end, or it can be anybody, but the ability to do that is what makes him good. Obviously, bigger is better, particularly when a lot of throws in there in the red area are at the back end line, you know, high up by the crossbar on the goalpost or off to the side. But, you know, those high throws in the back of the end zone, you know, that just gives the quarterback a little bigger target. But the guy's got to have good hands to be able to bring the ball down and make a tough catch. I mean, just being tall is, you know, might help, but without good hands, jumping skills, timing, concentration, you know, then that's only one component of it.
Last question right here, guys.
Rob Gronkowski to continue having success in that area when the defense knows there's a high probability that it's coming.
I mean, I don't know, and that's why we have other players on the team. I mean, they can't double cover everybody. And so, only got 11 guys out there. So, if one player draws coverage, then that lightens the load somewhere else. Coverage is somewhere else, and we have individual matchups. Then sooner or later, we're going to have to win on those individual matchups. I mean, take every pass doesn't go to the same guy. So, that's why we have everybody else out there. Okay. All right. Thank you.